If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
He did something no quarterback will ever do again. Get drafted in the eighth round. He's a two-time Pro Bowler and has as many rushing touchdowns as Joe Delaney. Look it up. It's true. It's time to go from the gun with Trent Green on the program.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sorrent Petro with you, and it's time to get to it. It's time to talk to the quarterback. Trent Green, as you heard, is with us here in the program. He joins us on our Sprint guest line. Trent, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, doing well. Another good weekend of football. And last Thursday, Chiefs went into to Denver and got a big win. So that's, good weekend.
It is, and it was nice to get the win and then get the time off, right? I enjoyed watching football with a win in my pocket. That's always a better way to do it. You had to have played in a Thursday nighter somewhere along the way. How miserable have you? Did you remember? Did you win them? Did you lose them? What does it do to your weekend?
I think we won more than we lost.
Okay.
The hard part was leading up to it, depending on how banged up you were. You know, you were always griping about having a short week, but then once it was over, if you won, you were like, oh, man, this is great. Now we've got, you know, it's really like having an extra bye week. So, there were mixed emotions about it, but if you were able to go into it healthy and then come out of it with the win, it made it all better.
Yeah, and now the Chiefs get a chance to get healthy, except for I don't think there's any chance that we're going to see Patrick Mahomes. Listen, there's this big debate around town, and I love it. Everybody's an armchair doctor and has it figured out. And the consensus is don't play him till he's 100% healthy. How does that work, right? You know, it's midseason, everybody's banged up.
There's no 100% healthy at this point in time, right?
Yeah, and to be 100% healthy, he's going to, in all likelihood, from the people I've talked to, have surgery, right? Now, he'll probably play without it, and I think that it's been talked about that Matt Stafford did the same kind of thing. He missed like 3 weeks, finished the season, and then he went and got the corrective surgery that he needed that required a longer a healing process. Maybe Patrick Mahomes doesn't. One of the doctors I spoke to seemed to think that it was impossible that he wouldn't. So no matter what, he's not going to be 100%. You can't just sacrifice the season and say, well, we'll give it a go next year. We quit on this year, right?
Yeah, you definitely can't do that. If it's possible for him to come back, I know the mentality of football players and coaches and personnel. It's you know what? When you're healthy enough to get back, that's when you want to get back out on the field. There's only 16 games, and nothing's a given. There's no automatic, hey, we're going to make the playoffs every year, and we're going to be contending for Super Bowls every year. It's just not an automatic. So anytime you get an opportunity or you've positioned yourselves the way the Chiefs have positioned themselves with all their offseason moves, with all the talent they have on the roster, you don't want to just, hey, we'll be fine and we'll just, you know, we'll go at it again another. I guess I look at it from a baseball standpoint, and I know the Nationals are in the World Series now, but do you remember a few years back when Strasburg was coming off of the injury and they shut him down, even though he was healthy and fine, but they said, nope, this is the number of pitches, this is the number of innings, we're shutting him down because we'll be back again next year. It's just not a given. So I would say as soon as Mahomes is ready to go, that he'll be in there ready.
Yeah. Where do you – we talked a lot about this on Friday. Where do you sit on the quarterback sneak and whether or not it should be used at all, and specifically if you've got a quarterback that has a bad ankle?
I have absolutely no problem with the quarterback sneak.
Thank you.
I'm getting a kick out of the, you know, how much of an outcry there is. And you know, with me traveling to my game, I had the game in Indianapolis this week with the Texans and the Colts. And so being in airports, bouncing around, people all, you know, they want to ask you what it is. What do you think? And I'm like, listen, it's football. Every single play you have an opportunity or possibility that something could happen, that you could have an injury. And it's a freak deal. If you look at the way he ran that quarterback sneak and the way that people landed on top of him, and it just so happened the angle of his knee and the body weight of the players on top of him caused the kneecap to slide to the outside. I mean, it's a one in a million type of thing. And so to think that was a bad call on Andy's part or something else different to do, I don't don't agree with it. Now, I will tell you this. I'm gonna backtrack and tell you a story from my time. And Al Saunders was offensive coordinator for my time here in Kansas City, and we always had a quarterback sneak in the playbook, but he never called it. And he would tell us this story about, as a young coach, about a quarterback getting hurt on a quarterback sneak. And he said, we're going to have the quarterback sneak in the playbook, but we will never call it. And the offensive linemen, you know, obviously we had Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson and Tony Richardson, and we had some great running backs and an unbelievable historical offensive line. So the quarterback sneak wasn't needed a lot, but there were times where we could have done it. And there were times where I would tell Casey Wigman, I'd say, listen, if I tap you on the butt or give you a lift, go ahead and snap it because there's nobody lined up in front of you, and I'm just going to go ahead and take the easy couple yards and get the first down. So there were times I did it without it being called, but Al was just one of those guys that just said, I'm never going to call it because of something that had happened to him early in his career to why he would never do it. But I don't have a problem with it, and I always argued for him to call it. He just wouldn't.
Yeah, and I think everybody, you know, seems to think that you can just put yourself in the Super Bowl and then, okay, now let's play all our valuable players.
Right.
And it just doesn't work like
that. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And I had, you know, a friend that was sitting at a kids game, and so there, and boy, he just was not going to let it go that they're not running the ball, and if they should have run the ball. I said, listen, are you not aware that on 4th-and-1 against the Colts, they ran the ball and didn't get it? You know, they got the first down, which was the objective of the play.
Right.
And then they ran it 3 times from 3 yards out and didn't get it in. They're not a good running team. This isn't your offensive line with Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson back there. There's no running back anywhere near. LeSean McCoy's the closest, but I don't think he's what he used to be. I mean, they're just like that's the part. I know everybody wants him to run it more, but they also want him to win. And when you're not effective running the ball, which they have not been, then you got to do something else. And I just don't.
And there are injuries on the offensive line as well.
So, yes.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, big injuries, by the way,
right,
when Eric Fisher's out of there. So, I don't know. You know, everybody, I always say it, you know, you can boil every call down that I take after a loss to this. Why didn't they win? You know, that's ultimately what it translates to. Why didn't they win? Everything is do something different, and ultimately it is why didn't they win? So, now here we sit.
Here's the thing. Here's why they did win. How about the performance of the defense?
Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know, incredible performance, kind of what everybody had been waiting for, to see Frank Clark do what he did, to see the constant pressure on the quarterback, to you know, create some turnovers. I mean, it was a great performance. Shut down, you know, really for the most part because of what had happened the previous 2 games against Houston and Indianapolis. You were thinking, okay, with Philip Lindsay, they're going to run the ball. I thought they did a great job of taking them out of that game plan and forcing Flacco to attempt to try and pass the ball. And, I give Spagnuolo and his crew a lot of credit.
In your mind, was it more the Chiefs' defense or more the wretchedness of the Broncos' offense?
I think it was a combination of both. I think, you know, to anticipate or think now, okay, that was the game that got us over the hump and we're going to do that every week, that's probably wishful thinking. I think that they needed that breakout game to where they started gaining confidence in it. Because when you change systems, change personnel, think about how much that whole side of the ball has been overhauled. And there have been a lot of comments about staying patient, and there's going to take time to acclimate to the new system and for Steve Spagnuolo to acclimate to his new players in terms of what to call and when to call it. So there are growing pains. I think this will help them a lot from a confidence standpoint, from the players having confidence in the system, and, of course, now the coaches having confidence that what they call can get executed properly.
And how much confidence, we're talking to Trent Green, of course, here in the program, how much confidence should there be in Matt Moore?
I have confidence in Matt Moore. I covered him several times when he was earlier in his career when I would broadcast some of his games. I think, you know, to sit here and say is he – I think it'd be a far stretch to say he's MVP caliber like a Patrick Mahomes, but – when you consider the weapons, I think Matt's efficient enough to be able to understand what this offense is and how he can spread the ball around. And a prime example of this would be to see what's going on in New Orleans. Teddy Bridgewater understands he's not Drew Brees, and that's not the game he wants to do. And another example would be the one I just had in Indianapolis with Jacoby Brissett. He said, listen, I understand who I am as a quarterback. I understand my strengths and weaknesses. I'm not Andrew Luck. I'm going to run this offense and conduct this offense the way I know how and the way I think this team best puts us in position to win, what we have on the defensive side, what we have in the running game, what we have at receivers. And Matt Moore's the same kind of thing. He's been around the league not long enough, been around the game long enough to understand he's got Travis Kelce, he's got Tyreek Hill, he's got Sammy Watkins when he's healthy. I mean, there's weapons all over the place, numerous running backs coming out of the backfield, both running game and receiving the ball. So I think he understands that and is not going to try and all of a sudden become someone that he's not. I think he'll function just fine. And as we said, we'll see how quickly Patrick can get back.
And he gets a chance to get those first team reps. How big of a difference is it? And how hard was it for him to step in and have the performance that he had when, you know, the bulk of the reps, and I'm sure every coach is a little bit different, but for the most part, we know the starter gets the bulk of them in the regular season. Now, how difficult was it to step in without that extra prep time and do what he did?
Well, here's the difficult thing that and I'm sure it's been discussed, but the fact that in training camp, mini camps, off season, OTAs, all that stuff, that's when you spread the reps around. When the reps are streamlined to just go to the starter, that's when the season starts, because there's just not enough. The way that NFL practices and everything are set up now, there's just not enough time. There's just not enough reps. So the starter takes everything. You got to remember, because of the injury to Henny, you know, Matt didn't get in here. Matt didn't play football a year ago, and then he didn't get in here until, you know, at the end of the preseason. So he really hasn't had a lot of reps. I love Travis Kelce's quote after the game that he said, you know, there were a bunch of guys that had never even caught a pass from him just standing on the sideline doing warm-up, let alone, you know, getting a rep with him out on the field. So, you know, I thought that was pretty funny and, you know, typical of Travis to just throw that out there. But, yeah, that's a difficult thing if you're Matt Moore, not really having the reps or the offseason or any of that thing to, you know, from a timing standpoint, and then not having played football in over a year.
How do they have to scale back the offense, or do they? Is it just a matter of, hey, this he doesn't have as much downfield stuff, so now maybe we're going to see more of some of the bubble screens and the slants and some of the shorter stuff?
Well, I don't want to say he doesn't have the downfield. He's got plenty strong enough arm to throw it downfield. What we have to remember is I don't necessarily think he has the same level of athleticism that Patrick has in terms of extending plays. And a big bulk of Patrick's big plays and big throws are when the pocket breaks down and he breaks contain and he makes plays happen outside the pocket. I think that's the thing that separates Patrick from a lot of other quarterbacks in the league is what he can do when extending plays. Very similar to what we see Russell Wilson doing. He's extending plays to open up the passing game and some of the things that Patrick does when the play breaks down. So I think from an offensive standpoint, you won't see a lot change in terms of the way Andy Reid calls it or in terms of the way Matt Moore tries to conduct things. They may not do as much movement stuff with Matt as they do with Patrick, but a lot of what Patrick does that makes him so special is improvised stuff that he's just on the same page with his receivers in terms of when the pocket breaks down, the quarterback breaks contain, these are the rules for the scramble drill. And every team has different rules or different concepts in how they want to handle scramble drills. And with somebody, you know, like Patrick Mahomes, it's going to be one way. And with a guy like Matt Moore, it's going to be another way. So I'm not so sure how much the play calling will change. It'll just be a lot less improvisation, I guess.
Yeah. How about the guys going up against? Aaron Rodgers had what he called his best game, 429 yards on 25 of 31, 5 touchdowns, no INTs. He ran for a touchdown as well. He's one of only 3 players to have 5 touchdowns, no INTs, and run for a touchdown, you know, and a perfect passer rating. You know, he after a really ugly start against the Bears, where you're like, oh, God, what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers?
Right.
He looked like the old Aaron Rodgers. How scary is that for this Chiefs defense to have to face him next?
Well, it's scary in that he's won an MVP. He's won a Super Bowl. He's won, you know, for a long time had been considered the best at his position. And then he comes out and says, this is the best I've ever played. So that's scary when a quarterback at his caliber comes out and says that. And you also have to remember, new head coach, new system. He didn't really play in the preseason, if at all. So there were going to be some adjustments that need to be made, you know, throughout the course of the season. So, yeah, this is a difficult task. Aaron Rodgers is playing at an MVP level. I think he's thrust himself into that with the play of the team and his caliber of play. You know, Patrick Mahomes has been at near the top of that this entire time. But, you have to consider Russell Wilson, Christian McCaffrey, and now Aaron Rodgers because of the level he is playing at.
When I watch Aaron Rodgers, I think he's the best thrower of the football that's ever lived. Now, maybe somebody will take that mantle away.
Oh, I've given him that. People have, you know, with my CBS job, they, you know, hey, who do you think the best quarterbacks are? And I've been, you know, for the last four, five, six, seven years, I've been saying Aaron Rodgers just because I do. I love watching him play. You know, I'm on the same page with you.
It is, and it's good to hear from a guy who played the position and played it at a high level that you have that same affinity. I mean, the way the ball comes out, I mean, he does. Patrick Mahomes does things like him.
Yes,
you know,
similar things.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to say, okay, pick a guy who's Patrick Mahomes most like, it might be Elway as opposed to Rodgers. Maybe it's probably in between Elway and Rodgers. But man, Rodgers. Just like it's unreal, like that 34-yard touchdown he had a couple of weeks ago, it like literally was the only place you could put the football,
yeah.
And it was like I said, 35 yards down the field. It's ridiculous. But after you have a game as good as he had, what are the odds he's going to be that hot again? I mean, trust me, if I'm going to pick a guy to bet on, it's him. But there should be some kind of market correction this week, right?
You would think, but you know, I know exactly what. I want to say it was Lazard that caught it.
Yeah,
the big
yep.
receiver that, you know, I hadn't even heard of him, and I'm like, who are these guys that Rodgers is throwing to? And then you find out, and you do a little research, and like, this is a big guy that can catch and run. And but yeah, he put that in the only spot he could. I haven't had a chance to watch the game this week, but the stats you just rattled off means I got to go watch it. So And you know, an impressive performance. You would think, as to your question, you would think there would be a correction, but it seems like he and the new coach are on the same page.
Yeah, and that was the big question about whether or not they would be on the same page. We're talking.
Well, because you look at the body language of the two of them. You like when they're having their talks on the sideline. They you know, and it's always difficult to read the body language, but. You know, I've been asked that a bunch too over the last few weeks. Is just what I think of that relationship, and it's just it doesn't seem like a warm, close relationship. But winning solves a lot of that.
But you know, do you really feel like there's a warm, close relationship between Belichick and Brady these days?
Oh no,
yeah.
No. I think there's respect.
Sure,
but I don't think it's a matter of hey, you know, what'd you do for dinner last night? I don't think there's any casual conversation.
Yeah, I would love to be a fly on the wall for that one. All right, Trick Green's with us. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the Kansas Lottery. A second chance, that's right. You can win a pair of tickets in the second chance drawings to go to the Chiefs this year at Arrowhead Stadium. Go to kslottery.com for more details. Trent, I will start you with this one. You're going to London to call the Bengals and Rams. Got any spot you got to hit? Any touristy place you're going to make sure you see?
So, you know, they usually keep us downtown by Buckingham Palace and Hyde Park, and I just get out on the times that I have to just go tour the city. I like just walking. So I'll throw on my headphones and a backpack or something, and I'll just start cruising around. So this is my fourth year now that Greg and I have been assigned a game over in London. So I kind of have my path. I'll walk over to Buckingham Palace. I'll go check out Big Ben. I always go to the Eye, go to the bridges and check out the forts downtown. You know, I kind of have this loop. I go by and check out the horses where the guard is. And I know there's more formal names. I'm just telling you how I piece it together. But it's a cool city to be in. It's tiring because it kind of messes you up that week and then it messes you up the next week. But it's always a lot of fun just to see the passion that people have for the NFL game all over the world. You go over there and it's not, you're generally seeing the two teams, you know, here in the States, you have the home team, the away team, and that's all it is. You go there to these games and you're going to have all 32 teams represented with jerseys and fans. They cheer good plays. It's not they're cheering specific things about either team. They're cheering good plays and good football. And it's amazing how much knowledge they've gained on the game and what good questions they ask as I'm cruising around the streets and getting to meet people.
All right, that was my next one. Do you get recognized in London by Londoners, not some, you know, American fan that's over there to watch their team, but by Londoners? Does anybody recognize you?
It usually is a handful. I would say German fans are more into football than anywhere. There will be some London fans that will stop me from time to time. Usually at a restaurant, they'll come up and say something. But yeah, the German fans that follow football, and if you go back to NFL Europe and when it was going on, the German fans were a lot more engaged in what was going on with American football. But I've had people coming up, you know, wanting to take selfies and pictures, and generally it's almost always German fans.
Yeah, very cool. Did you eat at St. Elmo in Indianapolis?
You know, we didn't.
Okay.
We didn't. And this was we did a year ago. We had a big crew or a bigger crew this year, and we just decided to try something different. So just to change for a change of pace, but we have made a commitment as a crew that if we get back again to Indianapolis this season, that that we'll be sure to hit it up. But yeah, for whatever reason, we all just kind of decided to try somewhere new.
Yeah, the famous steakhouse there, and their what is it? Their shrimp cocktail.
Oh, it's the horseradish with the shrimp cocktail. Yes, it's, it's like fire. Yes.
Yeah, it's slightly overrated for folks. If you haven't been there. My opinion anyway. All right, and finally, who gets the number one pick? Bengals or Dolphins? They're the two winless teams.
Oh wow. I'm gonna go right now. If you're making me pick right now, I'm gonna say the Dolphins.
Okay.
But I'm gonna spend a lot of time studying Bengals tape this week as I get prepared to head overseas. So I may change my mind next week. But right now I'm gonna go with Dolphins.
All right, Trent. Hey, safe travels. Enjoy the trip over to London, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
A new way to end your day. The program now from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. Cordarrelle Patterson now has 7 career kickoff return touchdowns. By the way, the guy, whoever was running that camera that hovers above the field, should get a Grammy or a Emmy. Be a Grammy if he had a Grammy record.
That'd be awesome.
That was one of the greatest works feats of camera spinning and focusing I've ever seen. It was incredible in that play.
You're talking about the Cordarrelle Patterson kick return for a touchdown?
It was fantastic. I don't know how they operate that thing, but that was brilliant. Only 2 players have more than his 7. I asked for either one.
7 kickoff returns for touchdowns?
2 guys have 8.
Since?
Ever.
Well, Devin Hester would seem like a likely candidate.
Nope.
Brian Westbrook.
Mm-mm.
Wasn't that his name? Wasn't that the...
No.
Who's the guy? Dave Meggett?
Nope.
Lionel James?
Nope. One of the guys did... Had 2 in 1
Darren
game
Sproles?
Here.
Oh, the Cribs.
Josh Cribs, 8.
And
all his were with Cleveland. This other guy split time with Seattle and the New York Jets. And not a name that jumps off. That you'll when I give you the name, you go, oh, yeah. But not a guy you would think, oh, well, he's kick returner extraordinaire. Leon Washington.
Oh, yeah.
It's that amazing, amazing the most.
You perfectly predicted the response I would have.
Oh, yeah. Like the most unassuming name to have 8
third down back
return touchdowns.
About 3 different times, I thought, you know what? They're going to make him a big part of the offense. Nope. Never did.
Did not happen.
Never did. Our thanks to Trent Green, by the way. Our thanks to Jazz, great Cajun food from Jazz. We're giving away out by the Legends. Great spot for you to grab some dinner tonight, 39th and State Line by the KU Med Center. And, of course, your pre- and post-headquarters for the Mavericks is the Jazz out by Silverstein Ice Center's arena in Independence, where we will be we'll be in Independence. We won't be at Jazz, but at E. Edwards Workwear later this week, by the way. So Independence-ites, Independenceans.
Independences.
People from Independence will be there coming up on Thursday with E. Edwards Workwear.
I've worn my E. Edwards Workwear, the Carhartt hoodie, 3 times since we got it. All 3 times, someone's gone, dude, that's a sharp looking.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it is.
The Carhartt gear is like, they're pullovers.
Really and, stylish.
And hoodies and activewear is awesome. Thanks for stealing my train of thought.
Sorry.
Where was I going? Where was I going?
Where was he going? It's a mystery.
Oh, Trent Green.
Yes.
Talking about it. And we've got the phone lines open here for a few minutes. I've been trying to take as many calls as possible here on a Monday, 913-3810-810. Trent Green talking about the quarterback sneak. I thought it was an interesting story about how Al Saunders had it in the playbook, but he would never run it. And so if you can recall Trent Green running it, and then he goes on to say, well, there'd be times I'd look at it, I wouldn't be covered, and I'd just had a little signal I'd give Casey Wiegman, and we'd just run it. He and I'd be the only two guys that knew it was coming, and we'd just get the first down and go. And so I think it's interesting the different philosophies. Maybe Dick Vermeil wanted it in the playbook or whatever, but we're never going to run it. It's there, but we'll never run it. Until what? You really need it?
Well, yeah.
Like why like is it in the playbook? It's in the playbook. You might do it. Listen, I think the quarterback sneak is one of those things where, you know, it's like hitting 12 against a 2 in blackjack. You can pretty much go either way, although smart is to hit it, right? You either hit it all the time or you stay all the time. But sitting around trying to guess when your quarterback's going to get hurt, no. It's either in your arsenal or it's not. Because having it in your arsenal also opens up other plays. One of the reasons why Tom Brady runs that all the time, and you will see them hurry up and run it. And they'll hurry up and run the sneak. They'll get it. It'll work. They'll also hurry up and run it, but not run it. Hurry up and the other team has practiced all week to be bunched up in the middle ready for a quarterback sneak. And then he turns around and fires a quick hitter pass. Mm-hmm. And everybody's bunched in the middle going for the quarterback sneak. Showing that you will run it. It's the same thing. There's a counter to the counter.
Yep.
And being able to come up and have a fire call to just run it before, you know, you get down to a second and short. And they're in a prevent defense. They're in a pass defense because you were had a penalty. It was first and 20, and you picked up 19 yards. To be able to run up and call it when they've got two down linemen and outside backers and nobody over the nose, and to be able to just come up and fire through, that's just smart football. If you don't want to expose the quarterback to it, I get that, then you never run it.
Yes.
But the concept of, like, there's a time and a place, well, not really. It's either in the repertoire or it's not. But I thought really interesting stuff from Trent Green, as it always is, about, you know, well, we had it, but we never ran it, but we did run it. I ran it. Al Saunders wasn't going to call it, I'd run it.
The value of working with the same center for, you know, however many consecutive games they played together, 70, 80, 80-some straight games they were together, you know that's one signal, boom, we go.
But, look, Patrick Mahomes, strap yourselves in for this, folks. As long as he's going to run around the way he runs around, he's going to get hurt. Okay, there will be more times that he gets hurt. Aaron Rodgers got hurt. You saw it with Tua Tagovailoa in Alabama over the weekend. Scrambling around. That's how a lot of those sprained ankles happen. Guys diving for you, and he lands, and he comes down on the foot, and the foot's in the ground, and it twists. This will not be the last sprained ankle for Patrick Mahomes. He's probably going to blow an ACL at some point.
Probably.
And it'll be the left one. See virtually every quarterback that's ever just stood in the pocket. It's a rough physical game. You're not going to be able to take away. There's no magic way to keep Patrick Mahomes from getting hurt. None.
No. And if you try, the methods you use to try are going to limit his productivity, and he's going to get hurt anyway.
And like I said, if you want to take the quarterback sneak out of the playbook, that's fine, but you also lose the ability to get the other team to gang up, bunch up in the middle, open some things up on the outside, which to me sounds like a really good plan when you've got as good a skill position players as the Chiefs do.
Yeah, and how much, I mean, all coaches are like this, but Andy Reid in particular, so much of their offense is built on running specific things in certain formations to get the defense ready, and then using the exact same formation doing something else. Mm-hmm. They do it every single week.
Yeah.
More than any team there is in football.
913-3-810-810. Let's talk to Tommy Moe. You're on the program, Tommy. What's up, buddy?
Hey, not too much. Hopefully the quarterback sneak can be perfected, much like Drew Brees and or Tom Brady, especially at the goal line where they jump over, put the ball past the line, and then sneak back and kind of fetal position it.
Yeah, listen, we all want the first down, and we all want him not to get hurt.
Sure. I mean, that's, you know, both those guys seem to they've kind of perfected that move. And think about the quarterback sneak. Trent Green was kind of like the first one to kind of describe what he thought actually happened on the play with, you know, whether it was the Denver guy striking his knee and his knee striking the ground and throwing it out of socket. It reminded me back to the Colt playoff game. If you remember, it was kind of about a 10-second. He fell on, I think, one of our offensive linemen, and it didn't look pretty harmless. And he kind of came up limping for maybe 10 seconds, and then he was fine after that. Do you remember that play?
I do. I absolutely do.
I was wondering if that was a precursor to, you know, kind of what happened. Was that your kneecap kind of moving a little and you felt it and it popped right back in place and everything was all right and played well the rest of that game and the New England game? So when I saw that, I go, the only time I ever really seen him hobbling around on his, with a knee was that play right there. So I'd be interested if that was if that bothered him on that play.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think wear and tear from the game adds up. And you get broken down a little bit at a time, and maybe what wouldn't have broken you 5 years earlier, now with ligaments that have had little minor tears with, you know, strains, sprains, mm-hmm. which are just minor tears, over time takes its toll, absolutely. 913-810-810, Caleb, you're in the program. What's up, Caleb?
Yeah, I was just curious. I've heard a lot of people talking about, you know, Mahomes with the knee and everything, which, by the way, I had no issue with the call whatsoever. I was shocked at how many people did end up having an issue with it. I just have been kind of surprised that no one has talked about the Madden curse. I mean, I was half expecting something to happen to him as soon as it was announced that he was going to be on the cover. But Mahomes being as awesome as he is, it seems like he's come out, at least with all the good news since the injury, it sounds like he's actually going to come out of it better than what most people do after that.
Don't they now have like multiple covers for Madden, kind of like regional covers? There isn't just one guy anymore. Isn't that how that works now?
I think they have like a main one, and then they have a secondary that's like for like the Ultimate Edition or something like that. And I think they've had a couple of them that were like throwbacks, some older guys, but that you still have the, you know, the one primary.
Okay. Yeah, I thought about it, but I assume since I don't hear much about it anymore that it had kind of just gone away, right? That we'd had 4 or 5 years where no one had gotten hurt or had a bad season.
Even when they didn't get hurt, I mean, we think about like Antonio Brown was on the one before that, and even though he didn't get hurt, he's no longer in the NFL.
Well, he did lead the NFL in touchdown receptions the year he was on the cover.
That's fair, but, you know, still a dramatic turn of events in his career. Anyway, I say kind of, I guess, more as a joke, but it's something that is still, when I saw it, when it was first announced that he was going to be on there as a Kansas City fan, you know, there's the excitement followed by a little bit of terror.
No, I hear you. I mean, listen, we're very, and thank you for the call, Caleb, we're very sensitive. It's been a long time since we've had the star player in the league. So, you know, I get why everybody's maybe hypersensitive. Chris, you're in the program. What's up, Chris?
Hey, with regard to the quarterback sneak, I support the quarterback sneak and don't have any issue with it. But one observation I hadn't heard yet was how we ran it. And so when you see Brady and some other guys run it, they do. They kind of hit that gap, kind of like Trent Green was talking about. But how we ran it is kind of what ends up happening on the goal line now, where our guys are piling in on top of Mahomes. And so what happened there, it looked like Blake Bell came just hard right into him, which I think there's a couple different ways to run the sneak, which is, hey, the running back runs the ball and then gets pushed. You don't want to do that really on the quarterback sneak with your valuable commodity. Again, I'm not saying that did it, but when you see our guys piling in behind, that just increases the risk of injury, I think, substantially.
I can't remember which game it was, and I appreciate the call, Chris. There was a game over the weekend where the quarterback tried to do the up over the top, mm-hmm. and the ball got knocked right out of his hands and taken the other way for a touchdown. Which one was it? Somebody was keeping it close, and they just blew it wide open. Was it Ohio State? No, it wasn't Ohio State. Auburn and Arkansas, or I'm trying to remember who it was, but there was one of the games from this
Tennessee?
Week. Yes, Tennessee's quarterback.
Yeah,
tried to do the up and over. And, of course, he was reaching the ball out, which is part of what you're trying to do there. Ball got knocked out of his hands and returned for a touchdown by, what, Alabama?
Yeah.
And so a game where they could have cut it, I think, to 7.
It was 28-13 at the time. They were trying to cut it to 8 or 7.
Yeah, yeah, and it went the other way. So, listen, you know, do you want the guy reaching out for the ball? Things are going to happen.
Yeah. The idea that you can build a strategy around things not happening is, as Danny would say, a fool's errand.
Yes. Dave, you're in the program. What's going on, Dave?
Hi, Saran. I enjoy your program very much.
Thank you, sir.
you guys were talking Friday about the possibility of a temporary quarterback to replace Matt Moore. And my position was is that, you know, when they got Matt Moore, I think Randy or Reed made the decision that he was going to go with that if something happened, kind of like period. And I haven't heard any other talk about going to a different quarterback for several days, and I just was wondering if everybody – I think they should stay with Matt Moore and make it work for they can't bring anybody in and get him in the system, and at least Matt Moore had worked under that system to some degree.
Well, if you're talking about the conversation we had, that's what we pretty much said is, like, this is the guy. And thank you for the call, Dave. I mean, it's going to take a couple of weeks to get anybody up to speed. And by that point, Chad Henne should be back, who was the guy that you really thought was going to be the backup to begin with. So there really isn't a situation here. We were talking about Patrick Mahomes being done. To me, there is no quarterback sitting out there, not currently signed, that's better than anything you've got, except for one guy. Right, there's only one guy who has shown that he can lead a team into the Super Bowl who's not currently signed and isn't 40-something.
Correct.
So you either are or are not going to go down that road. The Chiefs, to me, once Patrick Mahomes won the MVP, had a quarterback that was secure as the starter, and nobody would be asking whether or not, you know, you're going to go to Colin Kaepernick. So when the Chiefs made the opportunity or had the opportunity and made the decision, because they no doubt went through or, you know, all the people that are out there, they decided we're not going down this road. Chad Henne's the guy, and we're only bringing him in. You can have three quarterbacks. They didn't do it. They didn't go get him, and so that door is closed. I do believe it's been discussed. Not like we're about to get it done, but I believe it's been discussed, and they've decided not to do it for whatever reason. Many valid reasons.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with politics, just the firestorm that would come with it.
Yeah.
Is that too big a distraction? And if you came to the conclusion that it is, that's a legitimate conclusion.
Because it isn't just him, the name of him playing. It's the fact that he's made it known that whatever team he plays for, he's not going to commit to not doing it when he gets for the new team. So
right.
that is a big hurdle to overcome. But the last year he played, it's been 3 years since he played, and his team was not good that year, but his individual numbers were terrific. 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I mean, he had 90-plus quarterback rating, 97 quarterback rating. They were 1-10, but it wasn't because of Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, but they're not going there.
Yeah.
Or they would have done it. Trust me, if they were going to call him,
it would have been done.
It would have been on Friday.
Yes.
And that's not happening. If they were going to call anybody not currently on a roster, it would have been on Friday. They're going to promote Kyle Shermer. I mean, that's what they're going to do. Chase Litton, which we're going to talk about here in our need to know, Chase Litton's a free agent again.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been around the scheme.
Yeah.
If you wanted to go grab him or grab him for the practice squad.
You talked about guys who are up to speed. If it gets to that point, Chad Henne is up to speed.
Once he's eligible to come back and healthy enough to come back.
Yeah.
Which I hear is this week and another week.
Yeah.
So Matt Moore for two, and then if Patrick Mahomes isn't back, then you've got a Chad Henne, Matt Moore question.
For a week or two.
But I'll say this. When the Green Bay Packers are 6-1, and Aaron Rodgers just had what he called the best game he's ever had, and you're catching just 4 with what is essentially a third-string quarterback, you're getting quite a bit of respect from the odds makers.
Sure.
The Program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
All right, we mentioned a little bit earlier the AP Men's College Basketball poll is out. Michigan State is number one. They took 60 of 65 first-place votes. Kentucky's 2. They had 2 first-place votes. The Jayhawks are number 3. They had 3 first-place votes. The top 5 rounded out by Duke and Louisville. Second 5, Florida, Maryland, Gonzaga, North Carolina, and the Fightin' Frank Bulls, the Villanova Wildcats, at number 10. Missouri, in others receiving votes. Kansas State did not get any others receiving votes as far as the local schools go. And no Iowa or Nebraska in the poll either for some of the other local schools that are out there. Let's see. R.J. Davis, top 50 guard, committed to North Carolina this morning. It's the fourth pledge in the 2020 class for Roy Williams. He's having no problem landing talent. Nick Saban said that Tua Tagovailoa had successful surgery on his ankle and will participate only in non-weight-bearing activities for several days. They're talking about him maybe just missing one game. I think that's probably because LSU is looming over the horizon.
What's a non-weight-bearing activity?
Reading.
Studying your playbook, film study. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be about it.
Yep. Former Miami and Georgia head coach Mark Richt said he had a heart attack early Monday, but anticipates a quick recovery.
Must not have been too serious because he let everyone know via Twitter. So apparently from the hospital bed, got to get my 100 or 280 characters out.
The Sacramento Kings are quite happy with Buddy Hield. They've given him a four-year, $94 million extension.
Strong.
But I'm not going to say it pales in comparison. Mm-hmm. It's not the case, but it's not as much as Jaylen Brown, the third overall pick in his draft class. He agreed to a four-year, $115 million extension with the Boston Celtics.
24.
Either one of them like strike you as guys who ought to be getting tens of millions of dollars and lots of tens of millions of dollars?
Or 24 a year.
Wow. MLS announced that Sacramento is the latest city to be granted an expansion franchise. Weren't they already there? No, that was San Jose.
Yeah.
So Sacramento is the first time shot at it. They'll be at 29 clubs when they enter the league.
Wow.
I mean, getting there in a hurry.
Yeah, they are.
I like it. I'd like to see 40. I'd like to see relegation on an American level, but it's partially because we have good ownership here, and I don't think we'd have to worry about it. Caesars has opened the Astros as a -235 favorite, so almost 2.5 to 1, +195, so you get paid almost 2 to 1 if you're on the Nationals. It'll be Verlander, then Cole, then Greinke.
Mm-hmm.
I like the quote from A.J. Hinch. Greinke gets to hit. That's going to be fun for him. Astros manager A.J. Hinch talking about that.
Two notes on that on the pitching matchups. First postseason series ever to feature 5 of the top 10 pitchers in strikeouts. First World Series since 1945 to feature 6 of the top 20 in ERA. That's from Elias.
I saw something. There's like, you know, 6 or 7 ERA titles amongst this bunch. There's crazy. 5 Cy Youngs. There's an MVP.
I mean, Greinke Corbin is like the C matchup.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first two are crazy.
Former Chiefs quarterback Chase Linton is a free agent again, as we mentioned. Jacksonville officially releasing him today from their practice squad. So there's a guy with familiarity that the Chiefs could bring in probably to fill a practice squad spot that would be left by Kyle Shermer if he gets promoted. And if you missed it, Andy Reid saying it'd be a stretch for Patrick Mahomes to play for the Chiefs on Sunday night against the Green Bay Packers at Arrowhead Stadium. Like a Stretch Armstrong stretch.
I agree.
Like it's not going to happen kind of stretch.